This is the Truth Frequency Radio Network. We are TFR.
Truth Frequency Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome once again to your daily dose of deprogramming. I have to say once again how much I like that song. That is Imagine Dragons with Radioactive, and boy, I like that. It gets me pumped up. I hope that when you guys hear that, it gets you pumped up too. We are in a new age of alternative information, ladies and gentlemen, and I got to tell you, first and foremost, I want to thank everybody for tuning into the broadcast yesterday. That was without a doubt, a high water mark for us here at Red Pill Reports, having Greg Morse on to discuss the information that he and Scott Bennett have come up with was just absolutely incredible yesterday. I want to encourage everyone, if you didn't have an opportunity to listen to the show yesterday, you can go to redpillreports.com today, and you can find that show in the show sections from yesterday. I would also highly recommend that everyone go to our YouTube channel where we are hosting Greg's interview with V from Friday's show. So you'll kind of get a double dose of the whole story if you listen to both of those broadcasts. And I'm also very pleased to announce that joining us once again in about a week and a half, Greg Morse will be back to go through some of the technical aspects of the story that he is breaking. And that show is going to occur on Thanksgiving Day. And we're going to give him an extra half an hour, so we'll do an hour and a half with Greg Morse on Thanksgiving Day. I hope that all of you out there have got wonderful plans for Thanksgiving, but if you do not, I hope that you plan on spending it with me and with Greg Morse here at Red Pill Reports, at least in the morning, because we will be live. My family lives pretty far away, so I will be spending Thanksgiving here with Boulevard, and I'm really actually pretty excited about that and pretty excited about the idea that I could be joined by all of you. And so that's what's happening for next week. And into kind of recap some of what we talked about with Greg yesterday, when I said that this story was going to be larger than the internet, I was not joking. He and Scott have essentially put all of the puzzle pieces together to show the larger picture of what you could only really classify now as the largest and most complicit conspiratorial and criminal organization ever, you know, ever built on the planet at this point. And it all comes down to the fact that these people have gambled away your rights to your home. They have broken the chain of title. They have taken the titles from your homes, and they have compartmentalized them into derivative packages and sold them for thousands of trillions of dollars on the stock market, and then they use that money to fund terrorism outfits all over the world. And Greg and Scott have all the names, they have all the links. There's still more information forthcoming, but they are making the fight, and they are making the point that they have the information. It's the only place in the world that I know of where all that information has been brought together, and I can't tell you guys how appreciative we here at Red Pill Reports are to be part of the team bringing a real fight to the people. And in that vein, I also want to, first of all, thank everyone who went and signed Greg's petition yesterday. We have a direct link to his petition at the top of our page right now. You can go, you don't have to go into the news section, you don't have to do anything. You just go right to redpillreports.com. At the very top of the page, you will see a red link for the petition calling for public federal joint congressional investigation hearings. And here's the deal, guys, and I was talking to Greg about this yesterday. Greg and Scott have built the atomic bomb. that's essentially where we are at right now. We have the most powerful piece of equipment ever assembled in our arsenal to deploy against this criminal organization that stems from the banking cartel, and it is a global criminal organization. We have the bomb, ladies and gentlemen. What Greg and Scott need for us to do now is for all of us to team together and get the plane off the tarmac. So we are all the mechanics, guys. We are all the pilots. We are all the people that are going to populate this army that can then deliver this bomb to a public joint congressional investigation hearing. And I'll tell you, when that bomb goes off, ladies and gentlemen, these rats are going to scatter like we've never seen before in our lives. And I cannot commend Greg and Scott enough for having the courage to put the knife in their teeth and run right at these people, because at the end of the day, these people in power are essentially cowards, you guys. And if you put a knife in your teeth and you run right at them, you will see the true nature of their character come forth. So again, please go read this petition, get the petition letter, fundamentally understand what we are trying to do, which is to try and bring actual actionable items, actual resolution to this issue. And we all play a part in that now. So go to redpillreports.com, go to the petition link, and get this petition, get it in front of your friends, your family, your church group, anybody that you can think of that might be affected by the idea, the false idea, that they own their own home. Because right now, what Greg is saying is that at least 90% of the mortgages out there are fraudulent. 90%. So even if you're a renter, probably something you want to bring to your landlord's attention, and just so they know what's going on also. So again, get that petition, get it out in front of your friends. Let's get another, let's double the signatures that are on there right now. We have a long ways to go, but every battle starts with a first step, and this is part of that first step. Also, in the related news, there is an article called Your Mortgage Could Be Compromised, and there's another article called Learn If Your Mortgage Is Compromised. Both of these are put together by the staff here at Red Pill Reports. Fantastic articles. Definitely another thing to get in front of your friends and church group as we are talking about the Greg Morse issue. So definitely do a search for that. Also do a search for illegal mortgage securitization. Did banks gamble your home and distort chain of title? Very important that we ever get this information in front of people, because this is it, guys. You guys want something that you can do to make a change in the world around you. Here we go. We are there. We have a petition, and the petition has teeth. And if we get it into the right hands, we're going to make some major waves. Today's show is not going to be an exception in terms of the high water marks, ladies and gentlemen. We are going to be speaking with L.C. Vincent this afternoon, not this afternoon, at 11 o'clock. I always want to say this afternoon because it feels like this afternoon, because I get up so early to start going over all this news for you guys. But it won't be this afternoon. It will be 11 o'clock Central Time. We'll be joined by L.C. Vincent. Now, for those of you who don't know, L.C. Vincent is essentially a Renaissance man, probably one of the most interesting people I have ever met in my life, given the width and breadth of the subjects that he is aware of. He's a writer. He's a musician. He's a photojournalist. He also classifies himself as an interdimensional explorer, and I know a lot of my friends, we really like that title because we can relate. But what we're going to be talking about today, ladies and gentlemen, is frequency, and we're going to be talking about his book, which is called The 440 Enigma. And what we're talking about, you know, we have a theory here at Red Pill that everything is frequency, from the table that you're looking at and this desk and my mouse in my hand. All of this is frequency. You know, we see all matter being frequency on some level. And in regards to this book, The 440 Enigma, we're talking about frequency and vibration holding a critical yet important hidden power to affect our lives, our health, our society, and our world. Those of you who might be familiar with cymatics knows that the science of cymatics proves that frequency and vibration are the master keys and organizational foundation for the creation of all matter and life on this planet. Music itself has a hidden power to affect our minds, our bodies, our thoughts, and our society. Now, a lot of you folks now out there know, if you know me, that that was my major in college. I studied music for 5 years, was an opera singer, and to be perfectly honest, even after 5 years of intense Western music study, this is an issue that I had never heard of, which is why I was so intrigued by it initially, and then getting an opportunity to talk to LC to see how large this issue actually is amazing, and I think all of you will be astounding, so I definitely want you guys to stay tuned to see if a change in in what we consider to be the standard A tuning in music, we want to see if a change in that could be affecting us physically, mentally, emotionally, all of that. And if it does affect us physically, mentally, emotionally, where did that change come from? Was that change part of an agenda? Spoiler alert, yes, it was. We're going to get onto all that with LT Vincent in the second hour today, and I think that you guys will really enjoy this conversation with LC. He's a very, very interesting guy, so do stay tuned for that. We have a lot of news to get to today, ladies and gentlemen. I do my best every day in the first hour to go through all of the news that I find to be pertinent to your world, and I always crash and burn trying to get through all of it, but we'll start moving a little quicker here. In the national news today, news from France. France has identified one of its citizens Monday as the executioner in the latest ISIS video showing the beheading of an American hostage. A prosecutor in Paris identified him as Maxime Houchard, who is 22, a convert to Islam, whom French authorities have been tracking for years, apparently. He recently posted pictures of himself in fatigues in Syria. He also gave an interview to a French television network in July and claimed part of the credit for the ISIS capture of the Iraqi city of Mosul. And a terrorism expert, Jean-Charles Brissard, told NBC News how he was also able to recognize Houchard in the newly released video. He says the video released Sunday showed the severed head of Abdul Kassig, an American aid worker formerly known as Peter, and the beheadings of more than a dozen Syrian soldiers. More than 1,600 French nationals are involved with ISIS, including 376 in the combat zone, according to this French prosecutor. So, isn't it interesting that all of these executions being carried out in the name of ISIS are by known jihadists, not from Syria or Iraq? And is it also ironic that we've been tracking them for several years and yet they're still able to go through and do what it is that they've been able to go do? It's crazy. Just crazy. But nurtured event? I don't know. You guys tell me what you think. An EU document has come out this week suggesting the recalling of envoys if Israel's settlements threaten a two-state solution. So, EU now throwing their hat into the ring on the Israeli-Palestine issue. And new departments from the EU's sanctions department, and this was first reported by Haaretz on Saturday, show that potential punishments for Israel could include the recalling of EU ambassadors if settlement construction continues to advance in sensitive areas of the West Bank and East Jerusalem. Finally, somebody is going to do something about the Zionist spread in Jerusalem and the West Bank. And, you know, I don't know if this is just fodder for the newspapers, but man, I'm hopeful that somebody is going to do something about this. Diplomats familiar with the document's contexts told Haaretz that the two-page text includes two chapters of sticks to be used against Israel and a chapter of carrots to offer the Palestinians. European diplomats compared it to a menu at a Chinese restaurant from which either member state could choose which sanctions to implement. The document, written by Christian Berger, head of the European External Action Services Middle East Department. How would you like to have that title? Head of the European External Action Services Middle East Department. He expressed the principle that the European Union must respond with sanctions to actions by the Israeli government that threaten to make the two-state solution impossible. The European Union believes that construction in the areas of the West Bank and Palestine would threaten the establishment of a Palestinian state and block Jerusalem from being capital of both states, to which I say, duh, of course that's what's going to happen. So Israel's going to move forward with settlements, probably going to end up on the receiving end of more defiant violence from Palestine, and I don't blame them. Just my own two cents there, guys. In Nigeria, a female suicide bomber set off an explosion in northeastern Nigeria on Sunday, killing 13 people and injuring another 65, according to police. The bomber struck on Sunday at the market in Ajer, about 200 kilometers south of Bouaké. And this was, of course, according to the public relations officer in Bouchi. The bombing is the latest in a series of northeastern Nigeria attacks by Islamic extremists who have also seized several towns and cities and have kidnapped hundreds, including more than 200 girls. So they're not actually saying that this is Boko Haram, but they are indicating that there is a link between this bombing and the kidnapping of the girls in Nigeria. So most likely what they're saying under the radar there is that that was carried out at the behest of Boko Haram. Police officer fires on Mexico City students, inflaming tensions there. Of course, there are national protests and a national strike going on in Mexico right now, revolving around the disappearance and subsequent admission by police and gangs, drug gangs, really, in Mexico, that they colluded to kill and disappear the body of these 43 students. And the students that are still in the country are very, very angry about this. And we still see more turmoil going on in Mexico. But a police officer has been arrested and is under investigation after at least one student was injured in gunfire at a demonstration outside of a university in Mexico City. The shooting, in which two people received wounds, according to local reports, occurred when the lawmen opened fire on a crowd that had gathered to organize a November 20th national strike to demand justice for the 43 students who disappeared after authorities opened fire on them during a protest back in September. A group from the National Autonomous University of Mexico was standing near the Che Guevara Auditorium, which is a historic stronghold for social movements, and they were discussing their participation in an upcoming action when they were fired upon, according to the Latin American news agency Telesur. The officer said he had fired his gun in the air in a bid to deter around 20 people, and the bullet struck a male in the thigh. Now, how you shoot in the air and hit somebody in the thigh, I don't know. Maybe these police officers, like all police officers, need more training. I think that's kind of a given at this point. The national strike has been called for in protest to the presumed killings of dozens of students from the teachers' training college in the Guerrero State, in which classmates blamed on a corrupt local government and police force with close ties to drug cartels. So a national strike still in the works in Mexico. Looks like that is going to go down on the 20th of November. So I would expect that more turmoil coming out of Mexico in the days ahead. Let's see here. The Islamic militants have hacked to death a university professor in Bangladesh several years after he led a push to ban students wearing full face veils. So again, now we're starting to see more unrest, and as it's now coming out that we're seeing violence being carried out against people who are not at all on one side or the other. The police now are questioning two people over the murder of Rajshahi University, west of the Muslim majority county, where the victim was a professor of sociology. The victim, Professor Islam, followed the folk sect Baal, popular in parts of western Bangladesh, and whose members call themselves followers of humanism rather than that of a particular religion. But a few years ago, this gentleman did lead the call and asked women to remove their veils when they entered into his classroom, and that was a report that came out on Facebook a few years ago. But here we see again the Islamic State turning against people who are not Christian, who are not a separate sect of Islam from them, but just against anybody and everybody who doesn't agree with them. And then in related news, the Islamic State extremist group has executed a senior member of its own group who was accused of embezzling funds and theft. And this is, of course, according to the Syrian Observatory for Human Rights Monitor, who is right now stationed in Syria. The Islamic State executed a senior leader in the group of Syrian nationality, beheading him and hanging his body on a cross. According to reports, and the man was accused of taking money from Muslims and embezzling Islamic State funds. So don't mess with their money, even if you work for them, apparently, is what is going on there. Jumping back into Palestine and Jerusalem right now, a Palestinian bus driver was found hanged to death in his vehicle on Monday in an incident that led to stone-throwing protests by Palestinians suspecting foul play, but which Israelis police, citing autopsy results, termed a suicide. And this is Youssef al-Rumouni. He was found dead at the start of a route he was supposed to drive late on Sunday in a district of Jerusalem close to the Jewish settlements and Palestinian neighborhoods. So again, every day, more and more indications that the relations between Palestine and Israel are still being strained, and I don't believe we'll see anything happen to that until a large coalition of people step up and actually try and do something about the spread of Zionism, which it sounds like earlier in the broadcast we talked about the EU possibly doing exactly that. Slavery is still a problem globally. According to the Global Slavery Index, nearly 36 million people worldwide, or 0.5% of the world's population, are currently right now living as slaves. And this total is 20% higher than it was back in 2013, but they're citing better methodology. And the report defines slaves as people who are subject to forced labor, debt bondage, trafficking, sexual exploitation for money, and forced or servile marriage. So we see more and more indication that the world is not what we think that it is. This is a great article. Again, all of these articles are posted in the show section for the day at redpillreports.com, and you can go and follow along with these articles to get more information. I'm not able to get into these as much as I could, but the Global Slavery Index of 2014 is out, and it is hosted on our news link, and you can see a pretty startling map showing where all of these slaves live, and what a terrible world we've got, ladies and gentlemen. My goodness. Huh, my goodness. Global terrorism is on the rise, according to a new report coming from RT. A five-fold increase in terror-related deaths just since 2000. Almost 18,000 people were killed in terrorist attacks in 2013, which was a 61% increase from 2012. Four different terrorist groups, the Islamic State, Al-Qaeda, the Taliban, and Boko Haram, were responsible for two-thirds of all such deaths around the globe. It's unusual that they don't include the CIA or Mossad. I'm sorry, that's probably a diversion away from where this story wants me to go. Almost 18,000 people were killed in terrorist attacks in 2013. As I said, a 61% increase, according to the Global Terrorism Index. And this is produced by a London-based Institute for Economics and Peace, another fantastically oxymoronic title. Economics and peace, are those mutually exclusive? I think they very well might be. Also found that 80% of terrorist attack fatalities occurred in only five countries: Afghanistan, Iraq, Nigeria, Pakistan, and Syria. Most worryingly, the 63% increase from 11,133 terrorist deaths in 2012 to 17,958 in 2013 is the biggest year-on-year escalation since they started keeping records back in 2000. And since the turn of the millennium, the number of deaths due to terrorist activities has increased fivefold, which also coincided with the U.S. military campaigns in Afghanistan and Iraq. Is that a coincidence? No, couldn't possibly be a coincidence. But there you go. That's what's going on around the world right now. And let's move into the national front, get you guys up to date on what's going on in your neck of the woods. Big ol' attack. And we're talking about an internet attack at the State Department. That's right. Last month, suspected attack on the U.S. State Department's email system and website. They say there is no reason to believe the classified information was compromised, but the department has revealed that a portion of its email systems and public websites were shut down over the weekend, weeks after authorities detected suspicious activity believed to be the work of an outside hacker. They went on to say that no information would be shared about the source of the attack, which still remains under investigation. But the intrusion happened about the same time the White House announced several of its unclassified computer systems were hacked into by an outside intruder. In that particular case, officials were quick to lay blame on Russian hackers, possibly working in cooperation with the Kremlin. So, State Department got hacked, shut down the email system. They're not going to tell you anything more about it than that, but that is what has happened, ladies and gentlemen. In news out of Texas that is spurring a major interest in me to possibly move to Texas. I'm not going to lie. Texas has now introduced a new bill to derail the enforcement of virtually all federal gun control measures within the state borders. So a new federal law, including a statute, an executive, administrative, and or court order, or a rule that infringes upon a law-abiding citizen's right to keep and bear arms under the Second Amendment in the United States Constitution or Article 23, Section 23, Article 1, Texas Constitution is invalid and not enforceable into state. So, this new bill, which was introduced by the reelected state representative Tim Kleinschmidt, who is a Republican from Lexington, is House Bill 176, and it will declare all federal restrictions on the right to keep and bear arms invalid and not enforceable in the state of Texas. It also puts the onus on state employees who knowingly violate the act. It's putting the risk of a lawsuit for damages for assisting the federal government violate an individual's right to keep and bear arms in Texas. And this is obviously a defense of sovereign immunity would also be prohibited in such a suit. So not only are they actually working to protect your rights in Texas. They're actually looking to make it a crime for law enforcement officers to violate those rights, which I'm kind of under the impression that if you're a peace officer, that should be pretty well understood anyway. But if we need to reiterate that to these people, that's fine. Let's do that. And I've got some very tragic news to report from New York yesterday. Yesterday, a gentleman was pushed in front of a train by a stranger, apparently, which pretty much outlines the scariest scenario that most New Yorkers probably try not to think about as often as possible. But it does tell you that it is a possibility. So yesterday, a gentleman with his wife standing on the platform waiting for the train in the subway, and without warning, somebody, and they are still looking for this person, and there was no confrontation between the victim and this person. This person just pushed this gentleman right in front of an oncoming train, killing him almost instantly. It's just tragic. I can't imagine, you know, with as much global violence as we see around the world, do we really need to be bringing it, you know, back to one another? We're all supposed to be protecting one another, and it's just, stories like this just break my heart, you guys. I just don't even know what to say about it. But they are still looking for the guy. They've got some video footage, and the police in New York are asking for help to try and locate the assailant. Just a tragic, tragic story, and I hate to have to bring it up, but it did happen, and so that's what's going on. We are just about out of time for the first segment of the show today, guys. When we come back, we're going to go into some more national news. We've got a lot of economic stuff to cover, and we have a lot of health news today. Also, I want to remind you to stay tuned for the 11 o'clock hour, in which we will feature the one and only L.C. Vincent. He's essentially a Renaissance man. Thank you very much for that conversation. So keep it right here, guys. This is the Red Pill Report's radio broadcast. Right back. I'm the host. See you in a minute.
So, you want the news and information without the hate, the hype, the fear? Well, you've come to the right place. You can support Truth Frequency Radio by spreading the word on social networking sites like Facebook, Twitter, or your favorite forums. Want to take Truth Frequency Radio on the road? Listen on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or other mobile devices. Want more than just the free stuff? Sign up for a VIP membership for as little as $4 a month and get super high-quality downloads, member-only content, and instant access to your favorite shows without the wait. It's only through your loving support that we're able to cover the cost and continue broadcasting. So now, stay tuned for more Free Speech Radio right here on the Truth Frequency Radio Network. KTFRN. Worldwide.
A sudden change in the wind. The day grows dark as ominous clouds move in and lightning begins to carve arcs in the sky. And you realize you are not prepared.
I am telling you to take cover.
The number of intense storms is increasing exponentially in the U.S. Tornadoes, hurricanes, flooding, and droughts are happening with greater magnitude and frequency. If you are choosing to rely on the government to save you,
and no one's coming to help them,
you could be dead wrong. The first step towards self-reliance in the face of disaster is a visit to MyPatriotSupply.com. There you'll find the absolute best prices on storable foods, non-GMO seeds, emergency water filtration devices, and so much more. All orders over $49 qualify for free shipping in the lower 48. Visit us online or call 866-229-0927. That's 866-229-0927. And speak to one of our preparedness advisors today. Remember, before it's time to survive, it's time to prepare. MyPatriotSupply.com.
Sure, I'm glad I tried that new Iodine Now microplant powder formulation.
You liked it, huh? I told you it would change your life.
Yeah, I feel fantastic, and I have so much more energy.
Hi, I have your Iodine Now delivery.
Oh, yes, my second order arrived. Thank you so much.
Hey, buddy, why don't you ask this lady out for a date?
Good idea. Now that I'm taking Iodine Now, I have the energy to enjoy my life again.
It looks like you're getting back your old charm, buddy.
I'd love to go out to dinner with you. And can I try some of the iodine now?
Of course you can. You just delivered me a one-year supply.
Your future looks really great.
I finally agree with you.
Iodine Now,
part of the Micro Plant Powder family. Micro Plant Powder is available in 15 different formulations. Call 888-910-4367 or visit the website to find the one that's right for you. And listen to our new audio descriptions for every product only at MFUSA.org.
We hold these truths to be self-evident and that all men are created equal.
The Freedom Link
with Joe Joseph, Monday through Friday on Truth Frequency Radio.
Welcome back to the broadcast, ladies and gentlemen. It is 10:30 Central Time. We are live like we are every day, Monday through Friday. We do a quick two-hour show. Seems like we blow through the news pretty quickly, and I want to hop right back into that. I want to remind everybody that if you would like to listen along to the broadcast, you can go to Truth Frequency, and you can click on the Listen Live button. There are also archives available of our show, which you can search for both at Truth Frequency. And you can find them also with a link from redpillreports.com. And if you would like to listen live over your telephone and you have unlimited minutes, the number to call is 832-225-5308. And that will get you our show right onto your phone. And you won't have to use up all of your fancy internet minutes or internet data connection to make all that happen. And I want to, again, recommend everybody stay tuned for the 11 o'clock hour. We're going to have a very, very interesting discussion about the global agenda to change frequency and how that global agenda to change frequency has affected all of our lives, our health, and probably gave birth to the horrible band Nickelback. So we'll go through all of that together with LC here in just a little while. And I appreciate all of you guys hanging with that. Also appreciate all of you guys going to redpillreports.com and finding the petition from yesterday that Greg Morse talked about. We need to get 100,000 people signed up on this petition, guys, and we don't have a lot of time to do it. So I want to encourage all of you to get that petition, to sign it, and to send it to your friends. This should be the subject of all of your community meetings going forward, because what is under threat right now is your very home ownership. And I think that once we flush this story out even more, you will begin to see just how serious this actually is and how many lives this story will actually touch. So I am very, very appreciative of all of you who have done that already, and I want to encourage all of you to support your friends in doing the same thing. So let's jump back into the national news. According to the Detroit Free Press this morning, a report has come out indicating that one in every 30 kids in the United States is homeless. The number of homeless children in the United States has surged in recent years to an all-time high, amounting to one child in every 30, according to a state-by-state report that blames America's high poverty rate, the lack of affordable housing, and the impacts of pervasive domestic violence. Titled America's Youngest Outcasts, the report issued Monday by the National Center on Family Homelessness calculates that 2.5 million American children were homeless at some point in 2013. This number is based on the Department of Education's latest count of 1.3 million homeless children in public schools, supplemented by estimates of homeless preschool children not counted by the Department of Education. The problem is particularly severe in California, which has one-eighth of the U.S. population but accounts for more than one-fifth of the homeless children, with a tally of nearly 527,000 children. Just staggering, staggering numbers. And Carmela DiCandia, director of the National Center and co-author of the report, noted that a federal government has made progress in reducing homelessness amongst veterans and chronically homeless adults. Last week, the U.S. Housing and Urban Development Secretary Julian Castro said that the U.S. is now on track to end veteran homelessness by the end of next year. I'll believe that when I see it. The idea that these people would do anything for our veterans, I don't buy it right now. Obama apparently met with the Ferguson activists. So we're coming back now around to Missouri, you guys. There is this whole issue going on with the Mike Brown murder that happened. I'm calling it a murder because I think it was a murder. And the pending grand jury indictment or non-indictment of Officer Darren Wilson. And what's really concerning about this story is that it was covered in the New York Times and nobody else picked it up. Nobody has even talked about this. But Obama himself met with the leaders of the protest movement that is still in Ferguson, and he instructed them, quote unquote, to stay the course. Man, if you need another indication of our divide and conquer government, of this whole keeping us divided, I'm sorry, I'm frustrated about this because the issue is not black and white, you guys. It has nothing to do with black on white violence. It has to do with an out of control law enforcement program that puts violent and unintelligent people in a position with weapons and then gives them the idea that they are somehow in charge. And they are not in charge. They are public servants. They work for us. You know, this Michael Brown situation is obviously out of control. For those of you who have been following it, it's very clear to me that if there was going to be an indictment of Darren Wilson, that it would have happened. We wouldn't see further disruption down there. We wouldn't see Barack Obama himself going and meeting with these activists, telling them that he wants them to essentially stay the course, which is the course that they're on is rioting. And of course, a lot of these people are not from Ferguson. They're not from St. Louis or the Florissant area. They are out-of-towners brought in specifically. It wouldn't even surprise me if they were paid to bring these people in, if these people were paid to be there in Ferguson to continue to foment unrest. I think this is a tinderbox, and I think that Obama is absolutely playing into the hands of this divide and conquer agenda. And, you know, in related news, indications now from local owners stores that sell hats, gloves, holsters, cold weather gear, things like that, indications are from them that Homeland Security has come into Ferguson. Homeland Security is on site. Now, most of the conjecture about Homeland Security being there is based on their goal of protecting federal buildings and banks and things like that. But according to Homeland Security, they will have no role in the Ferguson security plan. So why are they there? Why are we showing now? We can see pictures of, you know, up to 80 officers being on scene in Ferguson right now. Do you think they're preparing for something, you guys? Do you feel it in your hearts and your guts that things are going to go bad in Ferguson? Because I do. And I'll tell you what, the idea that they're bringing other people in from other places like Chicago, like Detroit, like some of these other places that are going to be subjected to the same kind of strife, those leaders are in communication with leaders back in their hometowns, you guys. This is not going to be constrained to Ferguson when this non-indictment happens. So making predictions right now, I realize we're getting way into conjecture, but I believe in my heart that the indictment will not happen. It would have happened already if it was going to happen. And second and most foremost, that the divide-and-conquer agenda is still, you know, running rampant in Ferguson right now, and it's exactly what they want. They want us to be against one another and not against them. And that's the name of the game, guys. And they are playing us like fiddles, doing a very good job, keeping us distracted, and it's just out of control. It's just out of control. I'm obviously very concerned about Ferguson because I grew up in St. Louis. So I have friends that live in Florissant. My parents live on the outskirts of St. Louis and not in the good outskirts. I'll just say that. So this violence has the propensity then to boil over into my personal life in ways that I'm just not willing to accept right now. So we need to turn the tide against these people. Everyone needs to wake up and realize that law enforcement is the problem. We need to remove law enforcement because all they do is beat up people and force you into positions where you need to give up. You know, they force you into positions of being oppressed, you guys. They, you know, if they're telling you that, we'll take for an example, you get a ticket for running a stop sign. Okay, you ran a stop sign. Great. In which case, the state is the victim. State doesn't trump you. You know, God made you, man. The minds of man came up with the state. At what point does the institution, or really now the for-profit institution that is actually only a corporation, has nothing to do with a real municipality anymore, how is it that these entities that were created by the minds of men somehow have more rights than I do? And I'll tell you, going back to my stop sign analogy, if you run that stop sign and you don't want to give them the Federal Reserve notes, say you don't want to have the tax liability of trading your labor for fake money, because that's a pretty, you know, understandable position to be in, now they're going to extort money out of you, and they're going to send guys to your house that want to put you in a cage for not trading your time, talent, and energy for fake money and then giving it to them, okay? And then they're going to put you in a cage. If you don't want to go in a cage, they're going to shoot you. They're going to kill you dead, and they're going to get a vacation, and they're going to get paid, and that's how it works. They have more rights than you do. The state, which was a creation of the minds of men, has more rights than you do. And that's not the world that I want to live in, you guys. That's not a constitutional republic. That's not a world where peace officers are sworn to protect your minority rights. And my minority rights are way more important than the rights of a fictional entity called a state. But we pump these people full of PTSD, we pump them full of pharmaceuticals, and then we give them a weapon and tell them that they are in charge. Is it any wonder that the violence reported by the Federal Bureau of Investigation, we had that report yesterday saying violence overall in terms of the population, way, way down. Guess which portion of the population it's not way, way down in? It's law enforcement. That's right, law enforcement. Way, way up, in fact. And is there a reason for that? Yes, I think that the agenda is thick with these people. And the divide and conquer, we're seeing it in Ferguson. We're going to continue to see it going forward, I believe. Okay, I'm digressing away from my soapbox. I apologize for my rant, but not really, because sometimes I like to rant. Anyway, let's move on to the markets right now, figure out what is going on in the global economy. The Dow is up, but not very much, sitting at 17,692. Happy days are still here. Gold has made a pretty significant move. We're almost gracing the $1,200 mark again now. It's up almost 1% just today. Silver doing the same thing, up almost 1% to $16.18. News out of the energy sector, Halliburton, which I know all of you are very familiar with. They are probably one of the most detrimental organizations that's ever existed on the planet in terms of war profiteering. And as recently as Friday, the merger talks between Halliburton and Baker Hughes were not going well. Baker Hughes being probably the second largest geopolitical engine for destruction on the planet. Well, now they've announced a deal. Halliburton said yesterday that it will spend $34.6 billion. That's B as in, boy, that is a lot of money to acquire Baker Hughes International. And this deal is the second and third largest companies in the industry will be forming an energy giant with more than 136,000 employees. So if they weren't doing enough damage before, we'll see. I bet they'll turn up the damage meter now will be pegged at 11, if I'm not mistaken. And a report from BizSmart coming out of London hours after the leaders of the world's G20 conference, hours after the leaders of the world's 20 most developed economies sought to boost confidence by promising to increase global output by $2 trillion over the next 5 years. And just hours after that, Japan said it fell into recession. Surprise, surprise, no one, I'm sure, saw that coming. But yet it happened anyway. And that leaves that country, which is the world's third largest economy, on a long and growing list of troubled economies. China is slowing as well, and Europe cannot seem to take off. And I want everyone to go to this article. It is on redpillreports.com under the news section. It is titled Red Warning Lights Flashing for Global Economy. It goes on to talk about some of the other factors that could be affecting global economy and the things that they think are probably the biggest oily rags in the room. They list Japan's recession, China's declining growth, and its struggling emerging markets as being some of these major facets. But the article is very good and in-depth, and I would recommend everybody, if you want to know a little bit more about what's going on globally, that would probably be a good place to go and check it out. I want to get into some Bitcoin news. Bitcoin is huge in the news right now. I've got three different articles related to Bitcoin right now as we speak. The first one is an offer by a company called Brokker. Now, I recently found out about Brokker, B-R-A-W-K-E-R, B-R-A-W-K-E-R, and they are a payment platform company, I guess would be the best way to describe it. But their coup de grace, their name of their game, is that they will convert Bitcoin into anything that they need to convert it into so that you can buy whatever it is you need to buy. So any product that's available on the internet, Brokker can help you turn your Bitcoins into something to buy them with and make it easy. And what's beautiful about Brokker is they also cut out the middleman. There's not going to be any taxes. There's not any fees involved or anything like that. So it's a fantastic service. But Brocker, in order to highlight the benefits of its platform and Bitcoin, have announced a new contest. And I personally, I'm going to apply for this. And I think all of you guys should apply for this also, because I think this is a great deal. But they are essentially going to pick one intern. They're going to give you $2,500 worth of Bitcoins, and your job is to survive for an entire month using nothing but Bitcoins. All you have to do is live on Bitcoin alone for an entire month at the company's expense. Okay, so they're going to pay you for your usual daily expenditures, your rent, your electricity, your groceries, all of that, but all of these items are going to have to be paid for through Brocker. And the hope is that they can demonstrate not only is it possible, but it's easy. And once someone is able to pay for their everyday needs, like rent, electricity, food, transportation, etc., they're going to be a lot more comfortable accepting the payment of their salary in Bitcoin. I personally would love to receive a salary in Bitcoin. I'd love to receive a salary in any denomination, if I'm honest. But Bitcoin would be very cool, and I would certainly like to encourage people to get involved with this, because even if they only do it with one person, they're saying that they may try and do this over and over and over again. And the more people with success in using Bitcoin, obviously the more Bitcoin is going to grow. And that, when we speak to all of the financial experts that we know around here, you know, the biggest thing about Bitcoin is that it does step away from regulation, and it steps away from the control that the central bankers have. So I, for one, am a pretty big fan of Bitcoin, and I wish I had a lot more of them. And if I had the money, perhaps I could get a lot more of them, because while all eyes have been on the Silk Road 2.0 and its alleged operator Blake Benthal this month, the U.S. Marshals Service announced yesterday that it will auction off 50,000 bitcoins belonging to Ross Ulbricht, who is the alleged mastermind of the original Silk Road, and this auction is going to take place in December. Back in June, the U.S. Marshals Service auctioned off approximately 30,000 bitcoins seized from the Silk Road servers back in October of 2013, but still held on to more than 144,000 bitcoins, which were found on Ulbricht's computer hard drive. Now, 6 months later, the U.S. Marshals Service has announced its plan to auction off the first third of Ulbricht's bitcoins. From 8 a.m. to 2 p.m. Eastern on December 4th, 50,000 bitcoins, which are currently worth about $20 million, which is more than I have, unfortunately, in the bank right now, they will be all auctioned off over email. All potential bidders must register by noon on December 1st, and the winning bidders will be notified at the end of the day after the auction. The money earned in the auction will sit in an escrow until Ulbricht's court case is concluded, according to the U.S. Marshals Service spokesperson Lindsay Donahue. Ulbricht's trial is scheduled currently to begin on the 5th of January, after being delayed from its original start date back in November. While he has pleaded not guilty to seven charges, including drug trafficking, money laundering, computer hacking, and ID theft, he says he is the owner of the Bitcoin on his computer, and that is according to a claim in the civil forfeiture action. And if Ulbricht were to win his case, he will receive the money obtained in the auction, but if he loses, the money will go to the Justice Department's Asset Forfeiture Fund, according to Donahue. And after next month's auction is over, U.S. Marshals Service will still be in possession of nearly 100,000. More Bitcoin news. Billionaire entrepreneurs who helped launch LinkedIn Corporation, Sun Microsystems, and Google and Yahoo are all among a group of investors who have now contributed $21 million to an unorthodox Bitcoin project that actually has no clear plan for turning a profit. Their bet, however, is that the project's A-list of cryptography experts and Bitcoin coders will unleash a new wave of internet disruption that decentralizes the entire economy. So, hang on a second. Let's just reread that for a second. It seems to me like what I just read was that a whole bunch of entrepreneurs who sponsored companies and founded companies like Sun Microsystems, Google, Yahoo, and LinkedIn are contributing a whole bunch of money to the potential disruption of the internet and decentralization of the entire economy, which I guess is a good thing. But at the same time, those are scary words when you put them together like that. You don't want to hear big companies betting on the decentralization of the entire economy, because that's going to be a scary time frame to live through. But that's what they're doing. The company known as Blockstream aims to enhance Bitcoin's blockchain, the distributed public ledger, which is the defining technology feature of Bitcoin. And in turn, they want to turn it into a universal platform for multiple new applications that go far beyond the digital currency's payments, for which Bitcoin is best. Will allow people to engage in trustless transactions without having to pay fees to middlemen such as trustees, registrars, and escrow managers. The decentralized blockchain is quote-unquote extremely difficult to corrupt and so has the potential to be quote-unquote an efficient platform for trading pretty much anything of value, according to Reid Hoffman, who is the co-founder of LinkedIn, and he was also one of the three lead investors in this funding round that we're talking about right now. Blockstream, he said, is developing the Bitcoin ecosystem to facilitate these prospects. And again, they don't really have a clear roadmap on how it will turn an open source software engineering product into a corporate moneymaker. But investors did take a leap of faith, mostly based on the reputation of the company's co-founder, who Tally Capital partner and co-contributor Matthew Rozek described as the highest caliber of human capital in the blockchain planet. So lots more money being funneled into the Bitcoin system. Lots of companies trying to develop side chains, which is going to be a word that we're going to start hearing quite a bit about coming forth, I do believe. And we will see what that technology advance does for all of us, hoping that we will start using technology for the advancement of all people as opposed to, just the corporations. But remains to be seen, I suppose. And let's move into some tech news. There's some pretty crazy tech stuff going on right now. How about the cloning of a woolly mammoth? That's right. They're going to try and clone a woolly mammoth. They're not thinking that they're going to have it knocked out this year, but they are not going to give up hope. There is going to be a TV show for those of you who are still into the programming that comes across the big glowing box on the Smithsonian Channel on November 29th, and they're talking about the autopsy of the woolly mammoth. But there is a lot of indication from scientific communities that they are going to go forward with an attempt to clone a woolly mammoth. I want a miniature woolly mammoth. If I could get one about the size of a medium-sized dog run around the house, I think that'd be pretty cool, but that's just me. Google is going to test fly balloons which transmit internet over Australia. So Google is bringing its audacious internet transmitting balloon system to Australia. The company is planning to test fly 20 balloons in Western Queensland in December in partnership with the company Telstra. It is the latest step in Google's Project Loon, and that's part of Google's plan to beam internet to remote parts of the world via helium balloons that circle the globe on stratospheric winds. The balloons carry antennas that can beam 4G-like signals to homes and phones 20 kilometers below. I don't believe I would have to get Deborah Tavares on the phone to explain to all of us how dangerous the idea of pumping 4G signals with the strength necessary to carry them from 20 kilometers above. I do not have to get Deborah Tavares on here to outline for all of you just how dangerous and stupid this is. Now, I am one of these people that does see some of the benefit in this, because obviously in war-torn areas or areas where they have decided to cut internet off, this could be a technology that would allow people to remain connected. But at the same time, pumping Wi-Fi in that type of quantity down from the sky is probably not very good from a health standpoint, and I think Deborah Tavares would probably back me up on that. Judges in Pierce County have made a pretty surprising and welcome move in terms of their law enforcement agency's options when it comes to running the Stingray devices. Now, those Stingray devices we've talked about quite a few times being essentially fake cell phone towers that are used to soak up information from every single electronic device that passes by. But now judges in Pierce County, Washington, have begun requiring law enforcement agencies to ask for specific permission when they use one of these cell site simulators. So this is really big news, and this came out in the Tacoma News Tribune on Saturday. Previously, as is the case nearly every place in the country, law enforcement officers would have to go to a judge asking for a PIN registrar, trap, and trace order. When in the pre-cell phone era, that allowed law enforcement officers to obtain someone's metadata in near real time. But now that same data can be gathered directly by the police themselves by using one of these Stingray devices, and they can also be used to intercept calls, text messages and the Stingray devices don't only work against one target phone, but like I said, they target anybody's phone who happens to nearby. So these new and more stringent standards is pretty unusual among the American courts. And this is after the Tacoma newspaper published a story back in August detailing how the devices were being used locally. The county's 22 Superior Court judges who first learned of the police department's cell site simulator from the News Tribune reporting now require language in the PIN registrar applications that spell out what the police's intended use of this device actually is. And in addition, the paper noted that law enforcement agencies that want to deploy the device must also now swear in their affidavits that they will not store data collected from people who are not targeted by the investigation. So probably doesn't need to be pointed out that these are rules that should have been in play from the get-go, and how sad it is that we have to have court orders from judges to clarify for the law enforcement exactly how it is that they should be doing their job. But I guess that's the nature of the Justice Department anyway, clarify the interpretation of these laws. But a welcome change in Pierce County. Love Washington State. They always seem to be at the forefront of things that are positive and moving forward. We have a lot more news in the tech and science department. Russia is planning a separate Wikipedia. They believe that the Wikipedia that we have doesn't give any good information about Russia, so they're going to create their own. That's interesting. And Aeromobile's flying car is very, very close to reality, guys. There's a very good article on the Singularity Hub showing some of the pictures of this flying car. And I'll tell you what, this one actually looks like something I would drive. There's a great video of it being introduced at the Pioneer Festival last month in Vienna. I would definitely recommend everyone check that out. Bird flu has been confirmed at a Yorkshire duck farm in the health news. There's a fantastic story about Big Pharma playing hide the ball with data and how much information is now becoming forthcoming about Big Pharma hiding all of the negative test results that they have. So go and check out redpillreports.com. Go to the show section for today and follow along with all of the news that I didn't get to. Get a chance to dig into some of the health stuff. There's a lot of great stuff. We're going to be back after 3 minutes with Elsie Vincent talking about 440 hertz being a, talking about frequency and vibration and the effects of it have.
Joe Joseph here for Truth Frequency Radio. According to allgov.com, since 9/11, a total of 238 Americans have died from a terrorist attack. That's 24 a year, making your chance of dying 1 in 625,000. Conversely, you have a 1 in 1,000 chance of becoming a victim of police brutality. Yet we spend trillions of dollars on the war on terror while militarizing an abusive police force. At TruthFrequencyRadio.com, we have a team of the very best personalities in independent media. A team that's dedicated to bringing you reliable and rock-solid news and information so you can arm yourself with knowledge and join the fight against worldwide oppression and tyranny. Truth Frequency Radio. News without the hate, hype, and fear.
We are submersed in a construct that was designed to break us and keep us broken. But it hasn't. It failed. We still go on because we were designed from an eternal template of infinite creativity and not a synthetic house of cards built on pride and false power. Breaking free from the programs and paradigms that hold us down takes courage, endurance, tenacity, and trust. The reason it is so hard is because to be a free and sovereign being, we have to smash every lie, even if it hurts. It is good to be reminded of how resilient, unbreakable, magnificent, and powerful we truly are. And if anything provides a foundation for that, it is the book, Our Universal Journey. Go to ouruniversaljourney.com.au.
Doctors don't want you to know about iodine because it allows the body to heal itself quickly and permanently. Iodine Now is a complete powder formulation that will load iodine into the body with vitamin C for the best possible absorption. Iodine Now, available by the case and for protection from radiation, fluoride, chlorine, and bromine.
including all heavy metals.
We believe that this is the main element that humans need more than any other at this time. This formulation is infused with our bioactive aerobic rare earth nutrient powder that has a powerful negative charge that attracts positive toxins. Why not buy one product that does the job of 20 and saves you space, time, and money, has a storage life of 100 years, all for about $18 a month. Call 888-910-4367 or visit hempusa.org. Call 888-910-4367. Bringing back the universal medicine for mankind. Iodine now, only at hempusa.org.
You must unite what has been set us
up. We are TFR.
Truth Frequency Radio.
Welcome back to the broadcast, ladies and gentlemen. We are live. It is straight up 11 o'clock Central Time, and we are subsequently moving into the guest portion of the program today. Again, the program is Red Pill Reports radio broadcast. Today is the 18th day of November, and I hope all of you are enjoying the show so far. I have to say, first and foremost, how absolutely excited I am to welcome the next guest to the show. Elsie Vincent is, without a doubt, one of the, he could be classified as a Renaissance man. I know I said that earlier, but I mean that in all sincerity. This gentleman's, the breadth and the width of his knowledge, and the subject matters that he has chosen to dive into in his life are just absolutely staggering, ladies and gentlemen. But let's just start at the beginning here. So Elsie Vincent is a writer, he's a musician, he's a photojournalist, and an interdimensional explorer, which is one of my favorite pastimes as well. He was born in Los Angeles. He spent his formative years there before moving on to Chicago, where he graduated from the University of Illinois. While in Chicago, Mr. Vincent studied under Duane Tam, who was a principal with the Chicago Symphony Orchestra. He also formed several music groups and recorded for Mercury Records. Concurrently, which means at the same time, ladies and gentlemen, he also worked for Motorola on the construction of frequency models based on the patents of Nikola Tesla before moving to San Francisco for 3 years of postgraduate study at San Francisco State University in radio and television. While a graduate student, Mr. Vincent's photography on Alcatraz was recognized by the San Francisco Examiner newspaper. And then after graduate school, Mr. Vincent worked in television program development before switching careers and working as a consultant for CBS Radio. He has traveled the globe in search of history, mystery, and adventure, exploring the ruins of the Third Reich throughout Germany, Austria, Italy, Poland, and while also concurrently pursuing his passion for photojournalism with subjects in China, Hong Kong, Macau, and the list just goes on and on. He has done so many things. He's been a long-haul trucker, an herbal gardener, an incense analyst, a railroad critic, media analyst, symbolist, and a body language and voice analyst, as well as being a life therapist. So when I tell you guys this gentleman is a Renaissance man, I believe that is an understatement. Elsie, thank you so much for joining us on Red Pill Reports today.
You're very welcome. It was great to be here with you.
Well, I wanted you to come on to the show because you have written a book, my friend, and I have mentioned to people here on this broadcast and other broadcasts that my history is that of music. You know, I studied music in school. It was my major. But until I ran across you and until I ran across your book, I had never heard about this issue before. And in reading your book and realizing the ramifications and the agenda that was at play in changing what we consider to be the note A, which all of us, we're going to get into this quite a bit more as the program progresses, but what kind of agenda was at play when they changed A from the 332, which exists in nature, to the 440, how that happened and what the ramifications of that were. That whole concept to me is just an amazing concept, Elsie, so I cannot thank you enough for having the courage to write the book that you did. And of course, the book is called The 440 Enigma, and you can find it at Elsie Vincent's website, which, if I'm not mistaken, is lcvincent.blogspot.com. Is that correct, sir?
Well, it's probably easier if they just send me an email at lcvincent888@gmail.com, because I don't think there's a way to order it from the Blogspot, but they could see my blogs there, sure.
Okay, perfect. Perfect. Well, LC, where would you like to begin? I realize, you know, we've had a lot of discussions on this channel about frequency and about how everything is frequency, but where would you like to begin? How did you first get into this story, I guess would be the best place to start. How did you, what was your aha moment that you had in realizing all of these things?
Well, when I lived in San Francisco, which was, oh, I guess about, well, we'll take this story about 15, 16 years ago, I was living in San Francisco and I was regularly attending the San Francisco Symphony Orchestra. Mm-hmm. And it was, the thought just occurred to me at one point just listening to the symphony that, you know, obviously there's a fundamental keynote, there's a tuning keynote to which all the instruments are tuned, and the reason that it occurred to me is, you know, I would go to the symphony and go there early, and, you know, if you get there at all early, you hear the musicians tuning up, and mm-hmm. someone plays a note on the piano, and then all the strings and the brass tune into that specific frequency. So obviously there's a keynote that all the musicians tune to. Mm-hmm. And as I went through this process, you know, different performances and recitals over and over again, it just occurred to me to wonder who and how was that frequency ever determined? Mm-hmm. You know, how was a certain specific frequency of all the frequencies that exist determined that this one particular frequency was going to be the tuning frequency by which all the other instruments in the orchestra were tuned. So I took a course that was offered by the concertmaster of the San Francisco Symphony. And the course basically traced the musical development of classical music as an art form from the 12th century onward, starting with Gregorian chants. And the course lasted about 2 months and met once a week. And towards the end of the course, I asked the symphony master, well, you know, how was it determined and who determined that the key tuning frequency, which is actually A above middle C, being 440 hertz or 440 cycles per second, how was that determined that that would be the tuning frequency for musicians? And I figured if anyone, the orchestra master of the San Francisco Symphony would know the answer to that.
Right.
Well, he didn't. And I was really shocked. And so he said, well, you know, that's a great question, but I really don't know the answer to it. And, you know, I know it was established sometime at the turn of the last century, but I don't really know how it really came about. So that question sort of rattled around in my mind. Mm-hmm. And as I did more reading and research upon esoteric subject matters, I began to realize that frequency really is the organizational principle of the universe. I mean, frequency comprises everything. Frequency is how we see things, how we hear things. Frequency can also turn from light into heat. Frequency basically determines the structure and shape of matter. And then I began to put two and two together, so to speak, and realize that if frequency affects matter in the most fundamental basis for the creation of the universe, and also frequency has to affect the creation of man, which is a reflection of the cosmos. You know, the idea that the physical structure that we inhabit, what we call our bodies, is essentially a microcosm of the macrocosm. In other words, we are the small reflection of the larger reflection of the universe within us. So that led me to a little bit of detective work on trying to understand how it came about that 440 hertz is the tuning frequency for Western music was eventually derived. So that's how I began my investigation.
Wow. Well, I mean, and the subject matter is so fascinating, but I want to make sure we're not going to lose anybody along the way. You mentioned a second ago the relationship between frequency and sound, but I want to make sure that that's really concrete for everybody, in that if you were to take, you know, a guitar string and you were able then to vibrate it at 440 cycles per second, the sound that you would be hearing from that string would be what we classically now refer to as A above middle C on a piano. So that specific tone, A, is a reflection of frequency directly. And so I guess the question that I have then is how do we know, or what's the relationship between frequency, math, and music, I guess would be the general question that I have for you. How do we you know, quantify the relationship between frequency, math, and music, Elsie?
Are you saying mass, M-A-S-S, or M-A-T-H?
M-A-T-H, as in, you know, because...
Oh, okay.
Or the relationship from math and nature and music versus the math and the agenda in music, what we have now, I guess, would be the lead-in question that I've got for you.
Okay, well, you know, in my study of how all this came to be and how even the concept of music gradually emerged along with the rest of civilization, there were a lot of different civilizations that obviously had musical instruments, but it seemed that of all the ones that existed in the past, the Greeks were the ones who truly made a study of music as something that was absolutely essential to understanding how the world works. And they understood that there was something called the golden ratio, or the divine mean, which formed the basics of our 7-to-12-tone musical scale. And that was the ratio of one interval or integer to another. And they discovered that the same golden ratio was also expressed in nature in what they call the Fibonacci series of numerical relationships, which you could see in the construction of a nautilus shell, or the construction of the way flowers propagate around the central shaft, or the way leaves are arranged on a tree bough. It all relates to a certain ratio, and these ratios are also reflected in the musical scale. And various philosophers understood that there's not only a mathematical relationship between musical notes, but that same mathematical relationship is reflected not only in our body, but in all of nature's creations. The same numerical patterns happen over and over and over again. And just to give you an example of just some of these patterns that we see, I'm going to give you some cosmic relationships. Okay. The moon, for instance, has a diameter of 2,160 miles, and the reason that's important is that when the Greeks developed their tuning, their tuning was based on having A at 432 cycles. So, for instance, the diameter of the moon is 2,160 miles, which is 5 times the number 432. The diameter of the sun is 864,000 miles, or 432,000 times 2. Wow. The precession of the zodiac of the equinox is 25,920 years, or 432 times 60. In 12 hours, or 432,000 seconds. So this number is a cosmic integer, keeps repeating over and over and over again. And when we had a discussion off air, you mentioned Roslyn Chapel, which is something we'll get into possibly later on during our conversation. But Roslyn Chapel is a very interesting chapel in Midlothian, Scotland, that was built in the 15th century. And recently, in 2007, these two researchers, one was named Stuart Mitchell, the other was Thomas Mitchell, who was his father, discovered that there was actually a musical pattern or symphony carved in stone in that chapel, and the bass tone, or the keynote frequency of that, the music that they discovered that was actually set in stone, was 432 hertz. That was the keynote tuning frequency. So, you know, again, we see these patterns repeated and or hidden, not only in nature, but in architecture created by secret societies. which I find very fascinating.
Oh, it's exceptionally fascinating. And now you actually just clarified something for me, because I was under the impression that the keynote that was signified by the carvings in Roslyn was 440. So because when I
no, it's
when
not.
Which is significant. That's a significant detail to note, because if it had been 440, then my mind immediately went to, well, this is one of the first examples of mind control that we've ever seen, you know, where they're making, well, you know, they're making, think about the, you talked about the transition from Gregorian chant into, you know, what we consider to be more classically refined classical music. And the one example that I always think of is Palestrina. And if anybody out there hasn't heard of Palestrina, you need to immediately after the show go and listen to some, because he was the first guy that took, you know, the single line of Gregorian chant, which is one symbol, one simple melodic line, and started stacking other melodies up on top of those things. So, you know, if you imagine you're in a time frame where, you know, there's a monarchy going on and the church has all the power, and they're coming out of a segment of time where they're speaking to you in Latin, so you don't know what they're saying, and then there's Gregorian chant, which is probably one of the most awful things to listen to outside of serialism music that there is on the planet. And then all of a sudden you're in this stone cathedral that was built to the golden ratio, and you've got four separate choirs all singing in 16 voices. I mean, it would have been awe-inspiring. If you were not a spiritual person before being in a church like that, you would be afterwards. So my mind immediately went, well, if they are signifying that these choirs are tuning to 440, then it opens up the realm of possibility that there was knowledge about 440 being detrimental to people, and that they were trying to use it to create mind control, essentially. But you're saying that it was actually 432, which even would make it even more amazing to be in that church environment, you know, in a big stone cathedral with quality nature frequencies going on around you. It would have just been awe-inspiring. So I'm glad that you brought that up and made that distinction, Elsie.
Yeah, well, I was delighted to find that out myself. But, you know, apparently, what happened is that the secret societies that essentially built churches around Europe hid many messages in stone in the sense of mathematical secrets. And of course, Pythagoras said that architecture is music set into stone. I mean, he was the first one to actually put that into words, but that is the reality. I mean, because just like music, architecture uses ratios, and good architecture reflects certain harmonic ratios that are found in nature. So it is not beyond the bounds of imagination to postulate that a secret society that was privy to the numerical, mathematical relationships of the universe would want to preserve those relationships and send the message to future generations that this is really important. Mm-hmm. And the way that they did that was to carve these patterns in the Roslyn Chapel in certain ratios. I don't know. Most people probably haven't seen the interior of Roslyn Chapel. Unfortunately, I have yet to be there. I'd love to go and visit it. But I have seen photographs. And the interesting thing about the chapel, that very unusual, which I've never seen anywhere else in any other church or cathedral, is that the Roslyn Chapel has these little cubes that are suspended from arches, and they go all around the chapel. There were actually 215 of these cubes. And when Stuart Mitchell and his father Thomas were doing the research, they basically were puzzled as to why these cubes were extruded the way they were hung like Christmas ornaments from the arches, even though they're carved in stone. And they noticed that each one of these little cubes has a pattern. And so what they did, using cymatic reproduction, and cymatics is the study of the patterns that sound makes when passing through a material like sand on an iron plate. Right. They basically recreated these sound patterns into musical tones and notes, and created they unlocked a musical composition which they called the Roslyn Motet. Now, the interesting thing about these cubes is that there were 250 of them 215 of them originally. Two of them were broken off at some point in time between the 15th century and the present, so there are two missing. But the most interesting thing is that the number 216, not 215, is very significant. Right. Now, why, if 216 is significant, why were there 215 cubes? Mm-hmm. Well, they postulated that if you put all the 215 cubes together, you'd have one large cube, which would make the 216th cube.
Oh, that's sneaky guys.
Yeah, now why is 216 significant? Well, going back to what I said originally, do you remember when I said that 216 is reflected in the diameter of the moon, which is 2,160 miles, or right. 216 times 100. There's also the polar circumference of the Earth is 21,600 nautical miles. Right. And that's the same number of minutes, if you multiply the minutes in a circle. In other words, 1 minute, there's 60 minutes of arc in one of the divisions, 360 divisions of the circle. So 60 times 360 would be 21,600.
Wow.
So you see these patterns reflected. And another very interesting observation that they made is 216 is 6 times 6 times 6. Now, of course, the number 666, I think it's gotten a bad rap, and I think it's been misinterpreted for many years because in the Bible, the Bible, of course, is translated from different languages, and the idea that 666 refers to a beast, even the word itself could be mistranslated. But all I do know is that there are certain mathematical proportions that are reflected in the cosmos, and they found, for instance, that this 666 pattern was now found as a six-pointed star over the planet Saturn.
Right.
And that the Cassini space probe actually found this. The planet Saturn has a six-pointed star over one of its polar regions that it's actually visible from the space probe,
and it's so, permanent. It's a permanent feature of Jupiter that they on the pole
right.
at the North Pole is a steady, not rotating, six sided. It's a hexagon, but you could make it look like a star if you know were to attach the points. But talk about unusual, very
right.
weird, very weird.
So what I'm trying to essentially establish in all this is that there are certain numbers and certain ratios that are constantly reflected in the cosmos, not only in the stellar cosmos, but also down Earth, all the way from, whether you're looking at a flower or a pine cone, or you're looking at the proportion of man's, the way a man's body or a woman's body is built, these ratios are always there, and they go all the way down into our cellular structure, which is probably the most important thing to bear in mind, because our cells also are built upon harmonic ratios. They have patterns called ion channels in every cell. Every cell has a vibratory frequency, just like every organ system of our body has a vibratory frequency. So since our bodies reflect the cosmic ratios in the universe, it stands to reason that music that reinforces these cosmic ratios by simply replicating them naturally would be beneficial, whereas a musical standard that is not based on cosmic ratios and cosmic harmony would be detrimental. And that's exactly what we have nowadays. Currently, we have a tuning standard based on 440 that is completely distinct and cut off from cosmic numbers, sacred numbers, cosmic harmonic ratios, and which may be doing subtle but real damage, not only to our physical structures, but to our mental processes, creating harmony, disunity, and conflict among people and among our societies as well.
Mm-hmm. And what's scarier about that is that your evidence seems to suggest that that was a direct result of an agenda, like that 440 tuning key that we all tune to now was not part of some cosmic mistake that we've made, that there was actually a history and an evolution pulling us towards that. Do you want to talk about some of the history of A, you know, 440
sure,
planet?
I'll be more than happy to, because that is really where it becomes extremely interesting, and it's the part that really astounded me when I did the research. Let's go back slightly to roughly the 17th century and the creation of the Rothschild Empire. But it's, you know, it stands to reason that people who have enormous amounts of money at their disposal also have enormous amounts of resources. Probably the most obvious example, although most people wouldn't think about it, but if you consider the fact that the Vatican Library exists and its corridors are, you know, football fields in length, just catacomb after catacomb of stored knowledge that is not accessible to the common man, and yet it has been gathered from libraries all over the world and stored because the Vatican has the resources, the financial resources, not only to acquire this information, but to keep it and control the access to it. It also stands to reason that an individual or a family that has vast financial resources would want to acquire information that would provide them with an edge, whether that edge is financial, social, political, or in actuality, all of the above, as well as spiritual. They would want to find information that would provide them with an edge for whatever reasons that they wish. Now, you know, this edge can actually be worked in two ways. One is for the benefit of themselves and mankind, and one is for the benefit of themselves distinct from mankind. And unfortunately, if you look at the Rothschild, I don't know if you could call it philosophy, but just look at their history where they would finance both sides of wars, you know, Napoleon versus the English, for instance, they financed both sides of that war. It's just as they financed, secretly financed Hitler through their own bankers.
Absolutely. LC, we've got to run. I apologize for interrupting. We've got to take a quick 3-minute break. This is the only break of the hour, so we're going to be back in 3 minutes.
Okay.
And we'll continue this conversation. But isn't it funny how once we start talking about agenda, like a Rothschild rock show, just so hot. We'll be right back. 3 minutes, guys.
So, you want the news and information without the hate, the hype, the fear? Well, you've come to the right place. You can support Truth Frequency Radio by spreading the word on social networking sites like Facebook, Twitter, or your favorite forums. Want to take Truth Frequency Radio on the road? Listen on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or other mobile devices. Want more than just the free stuff? Sign up for a VIP membership for as little as $4 a month and get super high-quality downloads, member-only content, and instant access to your favorite shows without the wait. It's only through your loving support that we're able to cover the cost and continue broadcasting. So now, stay tuned for more Free Speech Radio right here on the Truth Frequency Radio Network. KTFRA. Worldwide.
In an emergency situation, would you drink contaminated water? You could if you had the amazing Life Straw from MyPatriotSupply.com. Life Straw is the most advanced personal water filter available today. It filters contaminated water from almost any source. Life Straw is lightweight and compact, perfect for hiking, camping, or in an emergency like a flood. Life Straw is easy to clean, comes with a 1-year warranty, and has been used worldwide since 2005. Get the amazing Life Straw personal water filter at MyPatriotSupply.com. Plus, check out Survival Sea Vault, 20 seed varieties for only $37.95, Tattler canning lids, long-term storable foods as low as $69.95, and much more at MyPatriotSupply.com. Enjoy stress-free shipping on all orders over $49. Call 866-229-0927 or visit MyPatriotSupply.com. That's 866-229-0927, MyPatriotSupply.com, for emergency preparedness, self-reliance, and food independence.
Since our founding in 2005, we at YouTube have continually strived to bring you the best possible video experience on the internet. But now, we're updating YouTube to make it even better and give our users more of what they want. Introducing YouTube Plus, the new and improved version of YouTube.
Advertising, I mean user experience, has always been our number one priority on YouTube. Recently, we've noticed that there's an abundance of clear white blank space in the margins of each page of YouTube. So we asked ourselves, why don't we fill these with bright, flashy ads? Now, every page will have full-size ads on the edges, and they may or may not be relevant to the videos you're watching. These ads might be unsavory enough to make you want to hide your screen from your parents, but that's what makes YouTube Plus all the more interactive.
'Cause what are you gonna do? Switch to Vimeo? YouTube Plus. What are you gonna do about it?
Degrees of Insanity with Donnie Gilson.
Sunday on Truth Frequency Radio.
Central Time. We are live right now and we are knee-deep in discussion with L.C. Vincent. What we are trying to get to the bottom of, whether or not there has been an agenda on the planet to change the natural note that we would consider to be A, given the breakdown of nature and mathematics as 432. We're talking about the agenda of the history of that change that took place that turned it into 440 and what some of the ramifications of that are. Now, I'll tell you, ladies and gentlemen, I don't have the technology to play YouTube videos for you guys, but here's what I want you to do. If you want to feel for yourself the difference between 440 and 432, here's what you do. Go to YouTube. I want you to do a search for Imagine by John Lennon. Okay, just get the standard regular old Imagine by John Lennon and listen to it. And then I want you to do another search on YouTube as well for Imagine by John Lennon converted into 432. And I guarantee you, I will bet you a dollar to a hole in a donut that you will feel, you will be able to feel, you may not be able to quantify it with words, but you will be able to feel a significant difference between those two pieces. And I think that that feeling that we're getting is the difference between being connected with nature and the difference between being connected with nature and the difference without being connected to nature. And I think you will feel it in your soul if you listen to both of those tracks, which is why I'm very excited to have LC joining us today to kind of work us through this 440 enigma and talk to us a little bit about how frequency is affecting all of us. And LC, we had before the break started to broach the subject of the history of the decision to land on 440 as the standard A, and I believe you were someplace in the middle of the 17th century when we cut loose. So if you want to take over from there, the floor is yours.
Sure, I'll be happy to. The reason we were into the 17th century and discussing the Rothschilds is because we were talking about the idea that organizations as well as families who have access to huge fortunes want to find knowledge that provides them with an edge, whether that edge is going to be used for economics or social gain or their own personal or human betterment. They want to gain as much knowledge as possible to provide them with an advantage. Now, how that advantage is used is really going to be up to them. They could use that secret knowledge or hidden knowledge for their own benefit in detriment to mankind, or they could use it for their own benefit and complementary benefit to mankind. Well, if you study the history of the Rothschilds, the fact that they have basically financed both sides of wars countless times, it's apparent that they make their money through conflict and social disruption.
Right.
Because that's what generates their money. In fact, one of the great stories about Amschel Rothschild is that when England was fighting Napoleon, and he was at the London stock market, he set out, you know, he had probably the best spine network in all of Europe, and he found out very early that Napoleon had been defeated at Waterloo. But as soon as he got that information, his agent spread the word on the floor of the London stock market that Napoleon had been victorious. So all the English business owners immediately began selling their stock because they wanted to get out while they could get some money for their stock. But of course, all the prices plummeted, and Rothschild's agents bought up all the stock of these various companies and corporations. Literally pennies on the dollar. So, as it turns out, when the actual news arrived in London that Wellington had defeated Napoleon, it became very apparent that the one main beneficiary of that false information had been Rothschild and the Rothschild family, who was able to essentially buy England lock, stock, and barrel that one maneuver. So they increased their fortunes tremendously. But getting back to secret knowledge, so a family that basically has a history of duplicity and not working for the common good, but working for their own benefit in detriment to the common good, would want to have knowledge that gives them an edge, but that would also continue to provide them with an edge into the future. And since their empire is based on conflict and war, how could they possibly go about promoting and fomenting more conflict between mankind and societies and different governments into the future, right? I mean, it's not a very savory thought, but nevertheless, one has to think along these lines because you're just forced to just by looking at their own history. So we go into the turn of the last century, and we find out that the Rockefeller family was actually the proxy for the Rothschild interest in America, just as J.P. Morgan was the Rothschild proxy for the Rothschild banking interests. Mm-hmm. And, of course, the Rockefellers began to make their money in oil, but they branched into other areas of power and influence and their so-called philanthropic charities. But one of the things that really struck me in a very peculiar way as I was studying this was that the Rockefeller family gave a grant to a musician and a musical instrument maker by the name of John C. Deegan at the turn of the last century to promote the idea that the musical tuning frequency of A would be 440 hertz and promote that as the Western tuning standard of the world for all the world's orchestras in the West. And I thought, this is really peculiar. What possible reason would a family like the Rockefellers, who remember are friends for the Rothschilds, mm-hmm. why would they have any interest in music? I mean, okay, I can understand they might have interest in going to a symphony and being seen and supporting the arts, et cetera, et cetera. But why be involved in the technicality of a tuning keynote frequency? It just didn't make any real sense until I began to study sacred numbers and harmonic cosmic ratios. Then I began to understand that the reason they pushed for this tuning frequency was it was more than just an accident. There was a purpose behind it. So what happened was in around 1896, John Deegan was a founding member of the American Federation of Musicians in New York City because he was a musical instrument maker. And the important thing about John C. Deegan was that he was a percussion music maker. In other words, all of his instruments that he made were based upon percussion, which means things like glockenspiels, chimes,
xylophones.
Xylophones, vibraphones, things that were literally permanently tuned. You could not change the musical frequencies of these instruments once they were manufactured, they're forever going to be at that frequency.
Correct. I just want to stop really quickly and like clarify for people. If you think about a xylophone, the reason that LC is saying what he's saying is that once that piece of wood is shaped to a certain size and weight, you know, that is the frequency that that wood is going to remove, you know, release once it's struck. So that's why we're talking about non-tunable instruments. These aren't your stringed instruments like your violins and your violas and your guitars and things like that, but these are permanently tuned instruments, right?
That's the whole key to it, exactly. So in 1910, John C. Deegan received a grant from the Rockefeller Foundation. And again, John C. Deegan is one of the founding members of the American Federation of Musicians. So John C. Deegan, the percussion musical instrument maker, received this grant from the Rockefeller Foundation to push and promote the idea that A would equal, the tuning frequency of A equals 440 would be the musical tuning frequency of all the musicians and orchestras of the world. And being that John C. Deegan was one of the founding members of the American Federation of Musicians and a percussion musical instrument maker, he was in the perfect position to push that idea, which is exactly what he did. Now, coincidentally, 2 years later, in 1912, John C. Deegan opened up the John C. Deegan Musical Instrument Company in Chicago, Illinois, in a building that is still standing today. And the fascinating thing about this building is the incredible size and scope of it. Now, here's a man who basically made musical instruments. And, of course, he made money, and he was somewhat prosperous. But this building, even at the turn of the last century, had to cost millions of dollars. It's one square city block, five stories high.
Wow.
And it's just an enormous building. And the only way that you can possibly fathom that anyone would have the money to build it is to get a loan from Mr. Rockefeller.
Right.
So in 1910, he gets a grant from the Rockefellers to push musical tuning frequencies of A equals 440. 1912, the building is actually built and finished. So there's almost no time differential between the time he received the grant to push A equals 440 to the time he could build a musical instrument plant where he could manufacture percussion instruments that are all tuned to A equals 440. Now, where it gets really interesting is what happened after that, because John C. Deegan created something called the carillon. The carillons were enormous musical chimes that were connected to towers. Okay. Now, when I say musical chimes connected to towers, you have to go back in time to the 1910s, 1920s, 1930s. The churches, the large churches all over the United States, had bell towers.
Okay.
And what the Deegan Company did was construct carillons. Now, these carillons were automated chime systems that rang on the hour and would play certain musical compositions of the hour, especially at noon and at 6 o'clock at night. Now, if you ever saw one of these carillons and you put a man next to it, the man looks like an ant. So these carillons were enormous constructions. And, of course, they're all tuned to A equals 440 and distributed throughout the United States. So here you have a musical grouping of a carillon system that is going to go off at least at noon and at 6 o'clock throughout the United States, through all the major cities of the United States, playing compositions that are based on A equals 440. Huh. And then beyond that, when the NBC radio system came into effect, they used three vibratory tones as their trademark. It was called the NBC Tritone logo, mm-hmm. which was, again, the little vibratory, it's like a mini vibraphone, were supplied by the Deegan Company. So now when radio came along in the 1930s and the NBC radio network was formulated, every 15 minutes, you would have a 15-minute break and you would hear these tones, all based on 440 hertz. They were so pernicious that the Santa Fe Railroad used them for their porters to announce the dining car meals. And they were used all the way up through the late 50s as part of the NBC logo. So you have this society of the United States constantly bathed in 440 frequencies, not only in the popular music, but in their classical and symphonic music, in the music coming from church carillons, in the NBC tunes coming from the radio. And why is this all relevant? Well, it's relevant because 440 hertz as a tuning frequency has nothing to do with cosmic ratios or numbers, and it's basically a non-cosmic, well, I wouldn't say non-cosmic, but it's a non-sacred frequency. Mm-hmm. If you look at something called the oscilloscope, which was a scientific instrument that was developed by Eric Larson and John Stuart Reed to actually see how sound effects matter. Mm-hmm. You can see that when sound vibrates from sound particles at 440 hertz, you see disharmony and disorganization. When it vibrates through those same particles at 432 hertz, a triangle is formed. A triangle is harmonious. Mm-hmm. You have the triangle represents the triad, and this is completely repeatable. Just like they found that when you vibrate the word home, you get a circle with a dot, which is the representation of the universe. And so they were able, you know, as you shift frequency to frequency with the oscilloscope, you can see as you go from what they call sacred frequencies, or the frequencies and harmonic ratios found in nature, up to the ones that are not replicated in nature. Mm-hmm. It goes from recognizable structures to disharmony and chaos to recognizable structures to chaos to recognizable structures.
Right.
So if you have a musical tuning frequency that is basically disconnected from sacred tuning ratios and sacred numerical ratios, it's going to have an effect upon the cellular structure of your body, mm-hmm. the way your cells function or don't function properly. It'll have an effect away upon your emotional constitution, mm-hmm. which eventually has an effect upon the way you interact with other people, which eventually has an effect upon how your society interacts with other societies upon the planet. And that's one of the reasons why Dr. Leonard Horowitz, who wrote his first book was about the Ebola virus, and that was basically manufactured, but Dr. Horowitz also did musical research about tuning and frequency, mm-hmm. and he reported upon a meeting of that happened in 1939 between, strangely enough, Dr. Goebbels, who was the head of Nazi propaganda, and the Symphonic Society of England. And the interesting thing is that meeting basically came about to promulgate 440 hertz as the tuning frequency to establish it for all orchestras, because even though it had been established at the turn of the last century, mm-hmm. the orchestra's musicians, especially in France and in England, were dead set against it.
Really?
They didn't want it, despite the fact that the symphonic musicians didn't want it. They were overruled by their by the people in positions of power, and 440 was imposed upon symphonic orchestras through the auspices of the Third Reich and the collusion of the British government, which I found utterly fascinating. I mean, you would think that an organization that was comprised of musicians would essentially follow them, what the musicians would want. But in this case, it went in the exact opposite of what their membership wanted, and said, insisted on 440 being the tuning standard. So obviously there was an agenda coming from above, not from below, and that agenda was to continue to promote conflict, disharmony, and chaos on the planet. And of course, who benefits from all this? Well, the people who make all the armaments and supply all the uniforms and profit from the destruction of monarchies and kingdoms so that society can be reorganized along the lines that are more beneficial to their financial interests. Mm-hmm. It is really dark.
It's really, really, I mean, it really is. And what we've just outlined is you know, the bringing of this agenda from a musical society, and classical music, especially at the turn of the century, is probably a pretty small segment of the population. So you're not really affecting that many people. So then they said, okay, well, we need to affect more people. And then so they took over the church towers, essentially. And then they took over air and radio waves, you know, TV and radio waves. It's just remarkable. So, and I'm glad you brought up cymatics, because cymatics is obviously a very important part of this conversation. And for people out there who don't know, you can duplicate cymatics at home. If you have a speaker that, like a big, you know, old Pioneer speaker that you got from your stereo, you can lay it flat on its back and you can put a board on top of it and you can put some sand on it and you can play tones through it, and it will, you know, that matter will then redirect itself into patterns, which is just like what we're talking about. And you see that when you hit these frequencies that come from nature, that those patterns look beautiful, you know. But one of the other things that I wanted to mention in the course of your discussion, you reminded me about the experiment done with water in Japan. Are you familiar with that?
So perfect. Dr. Masaru Emoto.
Absolutely. So it's a perfect example of how frequency, in terms of both thought and speech, can affect matter like water, which I'm pretty sure we're mostly water. So, so many examples out there of how frequency can affect matter. It just makes you wonder what, and if we could show a correlation. It makes me wonder if we could show a correlation between when this switch happened and when it was made very public through the churches and through air and radio waves. If you could show a correlation between that and, you know, a downward slide of humanity, either in health or in, you know, more wars and things like that. What do you think about that?
Well, you can certainly trace a timeline between between the time of around 1910, when the AFM began to push for 40 hertz, to the outbreak of the First World War, you know, and really always had since the turn of the last century, is one war after another. They may not have been world wars, but if you look at all the conflicts around the world, it's just not, it's almost nonstop. I mean, we still have conflict as we speak today. We've got conflict in the Middle East, but there are other conflicts that are going around the world that are in the Ukraine and other places that are still ongoing. And we have societies that, instead of being cooperative, are competitive. You know, the irony is, you know, people always talk about world poverty and hunger and poor people dying and all that. The reality of the situation is we have the technology, we have the resources that everyone on this planet can live well. And I'm not really being facetious about this. Mm-hmm. Even with the population that we have, we could actually, if we put our minds to it, grow enough food, have proper sanitation, have clean drinking water, everyone could live well, and everyone could have a good life instead of a life of misery and hardship and poverty. Mm-hmm. But the reality of it is that the people who really control everything through their very long strings really don't want that. You know, the huge majority of our wealth is concentrated in a very small amount of families on this planet, and apparently they're only interested in acquiring more. And you know, to me, that's you know, after you have 10 houses, you know, how many can you live in at one time anyway?
Well, and it's if your family owns all the money, you know, if the money is fake and you own all of it, what else do you need? I mean, you really essentially all you have is power, and that's really where this comes from, is that they want.
That is exactly right. You know, someone asked someone who was very wealthy, well, how much money do you need? Obviously, you know, you can pay all your bills forever and, you know, you can buy whatever you want. Right. So what's left? And he said, well, the only thing that's left really is power. And that is the pleasure of manipulating society to see things that are done your way, whatever your way happens to be. That power is the ultimate aphrodisiac. And that's what the Kissinger said. A very warped little man who's been involved in lots of wars, as well as promulgating them. But anyway, it's amazing when you think of how something as wonderful as music could be subverted to an evil agenda, and that, unfortunately, appears that's what happened to music today. And that's why I really think it's critically important to begin to retune our music to 432 hertz. Unfortunately, there are computer programs available where people actually can do that. I mean, not only can you retune your string instruments, that's fairly easy. You you can do that for yourself, but right. you can even take your CDs and basically put them through your computer and have them come out at 432. I don't have those programs. I don't sell them, and I can't recommend anybody. You can find them. They're available on the internet. So, you know, if you're going to listen to music in your own home, you might as well listen to it at a frequency that's going to benefit your own cellular structure.
Well, that to me is the most important aspect because, you know, people ask me all the time, they're, oh, you must listen to talk radio all the time when you're off the air. It's like, no, I either listen to Coltrane or I listen to Palestrina. But what strikes me about this is that I might have been doing cellular damage to myself by listening to those things in the frequencies related to 440. And it's funny that you can spend time trying to convince yourself that the music that you're listening to is relaxing when internally it might be everything but.
Yeah, I mean, that is a great irony and the great... really the great deception is you get, if you have the most beautiful orchestral piece in the world and your conscious mind just loves it, but at the same time it's doing damage not only to your cellular structure, but to your subconscious thought patterns. I mean, think of the true evil of that situation.
Oh, it's staggering.
I mean, it's so deceptive.
Yeah. Well, and what really gets me is that, you know, we talk a lot about the Rothschilds. We talk a lot about the international banking dynasty and things like that. And nobody that listens to this radio show is under the impression that these are good guys or is under the impression that we can't trace their agenda of control going back, you know, hundreds, if not thousands and thousands of years. But but normally, the facets of their control are pretty well understood. You know, we understand that they control
exactly.
the financial industry. We understand that they control, you know, manufacturing, and they control politics and war. But they have gone into frequency. I mean, this
exactly.
is like this is like the biggest deal ever, LC.
Yeah, I know. It's, and you hit the nail right on the head. It's relatively easy, even though they might hide their control mechanisms through multiple corporations and layers of corporations. Mm-hmm. Ultimately, you can find out, you know, if you really want to push the envelope, you can find out who owns what and who controls what. Mm-hmm. But something as esoteric as music and frequencies, I mean, to most people, you even bring up the subject that there could be an agenda behind musical frequencies, and they look at it like you just arrived from Mars. But the reality is, if you study the history of how this situation came about, how 440 became standardized, you realize it wasn't by accident, it was by design. And then you have to ask yourself the obvious question, well, by design, by whom and for what reason? And, you know, the answer you get when you ask yourself that question is not very pretty.
No, it's not. And all those answers, ladies and gentlemen, are in L.C. Vincent's book, The 440 Enigma. L.C., thank you so much for joining us on the program today.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me as your guest. It's been a pleasure.
Absolutely. You're welcome back anytime. Tomorrow, our guest will be Dorian Hannes. We're talking about the Truth Farmer. It will be fantastic. Thank you, guys.
According to a 2010 earnings report, Google earns nearly $80 million in a single day. On August 15, 2012, Google was fined $22 million by the FTC for illegally stealing your data. Google learned its lesson, right? Wrong. The very next day, in a show of arrogance, the Washington Post reported that Google employees rode tricycles around sacred Mayan ruins.
Because we know where you are, we know where you've been, we can more or less guess what you're thinking about.
Can you trust this megalomaniac with your personal information? Can you trust Google? With Microsoft's Bing, Steve Ballmer has personally ensured your privacy. He's even partnered with Facebook to keep you connected to your loved ones. Make the moral choice. Decide with Bing.
I'm Steve Ballmer, and I approve this message.